Elissa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show and looking forward to the start of spring football as many teams are already getting underway. And today we are shining the spotlight on the University of Oklahoma. We're going to Norman, Oklahoma, and giving us the inside perspective for all of Sooner sports. We're going to talk about a number of things. Is the senior writer for OU Insider, my dear friend James Hill. How are you, James?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm always great when, you know, I get fired up. My adrenaline starts pumping when we start talking about Sooner football. This is a great time of year. And I know we have not had a chance, James, to talk since signing day earlier in February. And Oklahoma only signed 17 players. What did you think as far as in terms of the quality of this class?
Well, they didn't sign a lot of players, but they signed a great class. I mean, it's one of the better classes in the country. You know, the way recruiting rankings are done, you know, you get knocked if, you know, if you don't sign a what they consider a full class, 25 to 26, 27, 28 players. You know, you couldn't do that this year. And they're not going to be able to this upcoming year either. It's just the way it is. So, but the class they were able to put together was outstanding, one of the best classes in the country. And, you know, it features the number one receiver in the country in Trey Matuire. It features the number one or two running back in the country in Brandon Williams. It features an Elite 11 quarterback that just won the Watkins Award as the top student athlete in the country, in Kendall Thompson, who's enrolled early at OU. I think it has the best tight end class in the country in Max Stevenson and Dan Tapco, two guys that are highly regarded. It doesn't have a great offensive line class, but they did get two offensive tackles that are over 6'7". I think it has, if it's not the best defensive line class, it's one of them. You know, and Jordan Phillips, Jordan Wade, Nathan Hughes, and those particular players that came in, all those players played in, you know, the postseason All-American games. So, you know, it's a class that, you know, certainly has some outstanding players in it, and, you know, some players in it, and Danzel Williams right there out of Texas in the Arlington area, you know, is one of the, another guy that played in one of the, I think he played in the Under Armour All-American game in Florida. He comes in as a slot receiver, a running back. I mean, Oklahoma continues to add great speed, great individual skill talent. I mean, Franklin Shannon's a linebacker out of Dallas, Texas, right there in Skyline High School, a tremendous high school, and he comes in and he's so versatile, you know. He could play linebacker, could play safety, could do a number of different things. So I think it's really a star-studded class, and, you know, they also have signed players out of great programs. You know, Stony Point right there at Round Rock has been in the state finals three straight years.
Yeah.
They signed Wade and P.L. Lindley, linebacker there. So, no, it's a really good class. It's not a large class, but it's a really good class. It continues to add great speed to the program.
Well, and as you said, you know, so many players coming out of the state of Texas. In fact, I'll give you the numbers. 12 of the 17 players were out of Texas. Are these guys that you see like last year? We think of the freshman class that Bob Stoops signed in last year and that came in. They were immediate difference makers. Will these guys do the same?
Yeah, maybe. You know, last year what I thought was unique, but it shows you how the OU coaching staff works. They're never afraid to play a player, no matter of his age, no matter if he's on scholarship or not. That's why you're liable to see walk-ons like Trent Rattery right now move ahead of guys that are more highly thought of in recruiting and other things and that are on scholarship, you know, because they will play the best player. So Oklahoma's one of the schools that they can really point the facts that if you feel like you're better and you can play, you come to OU, you will play. And so that helps them in recruiting too, because those freshmen know no matter what their age is, they can step in and play. I mean, Kenny Stills stepped in the first day he was there, became a starter, and basically started the entire year. Tommy Harris did the same thing when he was here. And so many guys played key roles last year as true freshmen. And I think OU feels like that's the way things are going now in college football. Recruit the very best freshmen, high-level freshmen you can. Tell them they'll have an opportunity. Tell them if they'll come in and train in the offseason and really get after it in the offseason, which is the summer for most of those guys, that they'll have a chance to play, and it certainly is showing up. But you look at the guys that are coming in with what Oklahoma needs next year. I think Trey Matuire has a chance to step in and help at receiver. I think Brandon Williams has a chance to come in and start at running back. I mean, he has competition, obviously, but he has a chance. I think one of those defensive tackles has a chance to come in and play. Now, Marquise Anderson's more of a defensive end, but the way OU plays the 50 defense now, he's got a shot to play.
James, let me jump in here. What do you think is the greatest need that Oklahoma needs in terms of, like, positions? Are we talking the safety position?
No, it's running back, probably.
Okay.
They don't have a proven running back on campus. So it's probably there. And, yes, safety would be next. And you could say safety one, running back two, and both would be right. You know, the thing about safety, they have Javon Harris, who played enough at safety and is such a star on special teams. They're incredibly confident in what he can do. They have Sam Proctor, who started games before at safety. They have a corner in Aaron Colvin, who I think they would like to move to safety. Whether they'll do that in the spring will be interesting to see, because Jamel Fleming is not enrolled in school right now, so he's not a part of the program. He's not in school, as OU basically kicked him out of school for a semester for academic misconduct. So he's got to reapply at school, and he's in a junior college down in Texas right now. I'm not sure which one, but he's trying to get his academics, or he's trying to keep them on par, basically, and he's hoping that OU will readmit him. Now, the football program believes that they will, but whether it will be in time to go through off-season workouts in the summer, or whether it will be in the fall the fall practice starts in August, that remains to be seen. So Colvin, who they've looked at as a starter anyway and who they really liked as a freshman, you would think, okay, he steps in and plays the starting corner spot, but they might play him at safety and go ahead in the spring and see what Gabe Lynn can do, who was an All-American player out of Jinx, Oklahoma, a couple of years ago. So they have options. They have depth. They have young players they're really high on that we haven't really seen very much yet. And yeah, those are the two biggest needs, I think, at safety and at running back. And whether one's more important than the other, I don't know. But those are the two positions, at least, where solid starters, guys are going to play in the National Football League, have graduated. And those are two positions where guys have an opportunity to step in and play immediately.
We are going one-on-one with recruiting expert and a major contributor when you talk about the coverage of Sooner Sports. He is the senior writer with OU Insider, James Hale. And we are hitting on Sooner football. When does spring practice get underway, James?
Well, you know, because of what happened, with the recent NCAA secondary violation, Oklahoma's moved their spring practice back to the 21st. They were going to have it on the 8th. But they had so much bad weather, and then the NCAA said that they had to miss a week of off-season conditioning, that Oklahoma just moved it back to the 22nd. That still gives them, or will put them on course, to have the spring game on April the 16th, and that still gives them an opportunity to have one more practice afterwards on the 19th. So they won't take as many days off as they used to, and they have in the past. They've been taking a week off for spring break, but they're not doing that this time. And it will kind of resemble a normal spring practice that we were used to back in the day when you were in school and Coach Switzer was dominating college football at OU.
James, let me ask you, you do bring up the secondary violations. Kind of give us a pulse down here in Texas. What happened, and perhaps what was your reaction when you heard this unfold?
Violations. Every team turns in secondary violations. So you and your staff could start calling around and request, Information Act, and you could find out that every school has been turns in their secondary violations. Just about everything that you do in normal life is almost a secondary violation. But in this case, what happened was is that the University of Oklahoma determined that there were four coaches on the staff that had overstepped their bounds in trying to find out information about how summer workouts were going. And one of the coaches overstepped his bounds in trying to find out why an athlete did not participate in summer workouts. And supposedly that athlete, it was reported that that athlete actually recorded the conversation with the coach and turned it into the compliance staff. Now, what's interesting about that athlete, from what I know, is that athlete's still on the team, And he's actually changed back positions to work with the coach that he basically recorded. Now, this is, you would imagine this has caused a little bit of a turmoil within the football program, and maybe turmoil is not the right way to say it, but certainly some uneasiness that, you know, an athlete went to that extreme because they felt maybe they were working more than the 8 hours, or that the off-season conditioning program was too hard, or whatever it is. I mean, it's really a fine line, and OU tries hard to stay within the rules. I know this. I've talked to coaches about it. I know the paperwork they turn in. I know the extreme they go to. But when you have 8 hours that those that athletes can spend on off-season workouts, you know, what encompasses the 8 hours? Is it just the hour that you're in with Jerry Smith lifting weights? Is it the 30 extra minutes? Does that count that you're doing Pilates on your own? If you don't call a coach and that coach happens to bump into you in the hallway and says, how are you doing? Does that count an hour? I mean, all these things are kind of always leave coaches in a lurch and you don't know, but that's basically what happened to him in a nutshell.
How does something like this happen, though, James? Because, you know, being a part of a team, I mean, trust is everything. And this person, this individual, has obviously breached that trust. How can he remain on the team?
Well, I don't know, and it will be interesting to see if he does. I agree with you 100%, and you know you played sports and collegiate sports, and you're right, it's part of the team. And we all know that, you know, athletes in college and the college life, they put in the extra hours, they do extra things. That's just the way it is. That is it in college football nowadays. If the off-season workouts or the voluntary workouts are really, not voluntary workouts. They're must workouts. If you don't work out there, coaches look at you when you report to camp. And if you're fighting for a position, they're going to go with the guy that's been in their program and going through the summer workouts, more so than the guy that's not. So that's always been a part of it. But it's always in the off season when you hear about stuff like this because the practices are intense. You're not playing games. You're not really going to a practice, but the workouts are intense. Some guys handle it better than others. I don't know how an individual that basically ratted out his coaching staff and put his team through extra work, because believe me, when they actually get back out there with Jerry Smith and his staff, he's going to put them through their paces, man. They've missed a week, and in his mind, that's a week off that, you know, they just can't have. He's got to have them in a certain condition by the time practice starts on the 21st. And he knows a week has put him behind cycle. It's put him behind schedule. And I know the athletes I've talked to, they're mad as heck about it. And they dread the day they have to go back to practice. So it's not going to be a pleasant thing. And I don't know how that works out. And one thing I'll say about Bob Stoops, he's always believed in giving athletes second chances and try to work through their problems. I mean, Jazz Reynolds, when he posted that tweet, that was a very negative tweet, everybody thought, well, Bob will just kick him off the team and he'll get rid of him. But Bob also realizes he's dealing with a 20-year-old young man that needs guidance and needs some hard loving sometimes, you know. And, you know, we haven't heard much of Jazz on the team. He hasn't been given much of a chance to play, even though it looked like as a freshman he had a promising year or had a promising career ahead of him. That situation and circumstances kind of put him on the scout team, and he hasn't been able to get off the scout team, but he's still on the team.
Let me jump in here, James. The thing is, you know, when you send a tweet, sometimes that can be a spontaneous decision. You can regret it and then delete it out. But this sounded like this particular player, it was a very calculated decision. I mean, to tape record your coaches? Are you kidding me?
I agree. And
that's
like
crazy.
I said, I don't know how this will work out in the end. It's not going to be a surprise to me if we hear someday that this young man's not on the team. But he's going into spring practice in a positive role in the secondary. He's running no worse than second team right now going into the spring. And, it's right now it looks like, I'm just telling you, Bob is a tough guy. I think all of us realize sometimes when we deal with him, you can tell even in the media, he doesn't mind sparring with the media a little bit. I know on the field he's a tough guy. He was a tough guy when he played as a safety. He's very protective of his family. He'll go to great lengths to protect his family and keep them out of the public eye. But one thing I've seen, there's a couple of things. He deals a lot with children in hospitals, and it touches his heart greatly. And he always believes in giving his players second and third chances. And I think he's going to do that here.
Well, that says a lot. James Hale with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We know him well. He's the senior writer with OU Insider. We're talking Sooner football. Let's talk about some of the good news. How about the fact Kendall Thompson, I mean, I had to just, you know, get a second take at when I read this. Of course, the son of former Sooner Charles Thompson at Southmore High School in Moore, Oklahoma. Where does time go? It's just, I mean, I think of Charles being at OU just like yesterday.
I know. And,
it's crazy.
You know, Charles has overcome so much in his life. And
How is he doing?
Oh, he's doing great. You know, he's got a great job, and his wife stuck with him, and she's a beautiful woman. And, you know, God, how big is their family? I think it's six. I think there's three boys, five. I think there's three boys and two girls. And he's got two little boys. Kendall's always bragging on them that he thinks they're going to be better than him. And, boy, if they are, I hope they signed with Oklahoma. I mean, it's because Kendall is something else. And when he won the Watkins Award, people don't really understand. That means, according to this committee, and this they've been doing this for a number of years, he's the number one student-athlete in the country. I mean, that's an amazing thing for a high school athlete. He's the number one high school student-athlete in the country. That's an amazing thing. So Kendall's enrolled early. He's in the quarterback mix. It's interesting. OU's got all these big quarterbacks, you know. When they were at the Fiesta Bowl and Connecticut was covering OU, and OU came in for media day, which was inside a big ballroom in a hotel, the first guys that came in, he were quarterbacks. They were Landry Jones, Drew Allen, and who am I leaving out? The freshman. Blake Bell is who I'm thinking. Blake's 6'6.5", 6'6", 7". They all came in together, and it was interesting because when they came in, they were so big. I'm standing by a reporter, and the reporter goes, "Who's that, the defensive end?" I said, "No, that's the quarterbacks." He couldn't believe it. So, Oklahoma's got great. They've got great size in what they're doing. And Kendall is not as big as those guys.
Well, Charles was never. Talented. Yeah, his dad wasn't. How tall was Charles? 5'7", 5'8"?
5'10", you know. And
Charles, 5'10"? Okay.
Charles was a wishbone quarterback, you know. And so you can understand this guy's thinking. But, you know, Kendall is 6'2", but he's 180. You know, he's a left-hander. The rest of the guys are right-handed quarterbacks. His quarterback coach is a left-hander, Josh Heupel, you know. So, but he's got a lot of potential, and he enrolled early to get right in the mix with those guys, and I'm never going to count Kendall out of anything.
What kind of arm does he have?
Oh, really good. He's very accurate. As a left-hander, I always think left-handers throw the ball differently. You know, every time you look at him, you're going, God, it's kind of weird, you know, how they're throwing it. But, you know, Kenny Stabler was pretty good and always seems to get there. And, it's kind of the way with him. It always seems to get there, and it looks pretty good, you know.
The projections for OU, they're looking at being the number one team coming into the preseason for next year, and obviously a big reason in the storyline for that is when you return a linebacker like Travis Lewis and running back Ryan Broyles, and we can't overlook Landry Jones, it's going to be a very special year.
Well, they think so, you know, and you never know. But they think so. They think it's going to be really something impressive, and I think they feel like that. They've got things going pretty well, and I think they deserve that high ranking, whether it's number one, number two, number three, wherever it is. They deserve to be up there and rated pretty high. And they've got that kind of ability going for them. When they got Broyles and when they got Ryan and Travis Lewis back, that really added some experience and some key players that make a lot of plays for them, back on the football team. But, you know, they returned so many players. I think Landry Jones is a Heisman Trophy candidate. You know, he's already won a number of awards. He's already won the Sammy Baugh Award. He's already thrown for over 6,000 yards in his career. His quarterback his touchdown to interception ratio, and you know he's got most of his receiving core back that played last year, including DeJuan Miller, who was starting and blew out his knee during the season. He's got both tight ends back, and he's got even a third tight end they think's a better receiver than the first two. Defensively, those tackles have to grow up. They lose a great player in Jeremy Beal.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be a key player who they play at that jack position. But, you know, all their linebackers return, and their two corners return if Fleming can get back into school. So they have a lot of talent returning, and, you know, if they can shore up the kicking game a little bit, you know, I think this team has a chance to be really, really good.
Okay, so what will be the spring practice, the priorities that they will focus on the most? It'll be nice, you know, for the co-offensive coordinators with Josh Heupel and Jay Norville to, you know, kind of get on the same page and work some things out there too.
I agree with you. I think it's just to continue to get better. They figured out a way. They basically went and watched Alabama practice. They liked how Alabama was splitting the squad up, and everybody was getting the same reps in. So I think finding a running back or two that they can hitch their wagon to. I think finding who's going to play in the secondary, finding more depth at defensive tackle, finding more depth in the offensive line. I think the offensive line is going to be very competitive. I know Gabe Eichert and Tyler Evans are the starting guards returning. Stephen Good has played a lot. I know that. But Adam Shedd was really a great player on the scout team, and he may be the best athlete of the bunch. Their tackles, I think, have a lot of potential, but they like their two young redshirt freshmen tackles. Josh Aladnoy, who's from Texas, didn't play much last year, but they like his potential at offensive tackle. So I think there's tremendous competition across the board in this program, and I think spring will be very, very interesting to watch out and see how they all work it out.
It will be very competitive. Quickly tell us, the guy from Liberty Christian, Argyle, Texas, Ben Haburn, how is he doing? How is he progressing in the offseason?
Ben Haburn is doing very, very well. Ben's been a starting center since he's been at OU. He's a key player for the Sooners. I think he's got tons of potential. He's got a chance to be an all-conference guy, an all-American guy. I mean, he's got to get better, and he's got to stay healthy. He's got a consistent back problem that he's always dealing with and things. But, you know, Ben Haburn, man, is one of the standout players on this team. He very rarely has a bad snap, pretty good leader in this team. It's hard to believe he's already a junior. But he's one of the key players.
Yeah, well, the other guy that I can't believe that he's already getting ready to start his third year as a starter, and that is Landry Jones. I mean, what excites you the most about his game? I mean, you'd rattled off some of his impressive stats from last year. He'll be a preseason Heisman candidate, threw for 38 touchdowns last year. What would you like to see him improve upon as he goes into the 2011 season, James?
Well, he's improving as a leader and as a guy that is taking charge of this program. In some ways, it's off the charts what kind of leader he is. I mean, he's not afraid to start prayer meetings on campus, and he's not afraid to voice his views. But this has become his football program. When he had to break in, it was Sam's football program, but now it's become his. And he's just getting better all the time as a quarterback. Remember last year about the third game, everybody was saying, well, he can't throw the ball downfield. He's reluctant to throw the deep ball. Then against Oklahoma State, he's throwing the ball downfield and deep to win a game against a high-profile, high-octane offense that Oklahoma State had. He's just getting better. And what I look forward to is the fact he'll be so much better than he's been in the first 2 years, and he's been prolific. The problem with Landry Jones, he's following in the footsteps of Sam Bradford, and people won't give him his due.
That is not easy.
No, and if he'd been coming along by himself, or if he'd been the guy that kind of set up the quarterback standard, people would be talking about him across the country. At least now, people are saying he's a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate. At least now, most people are admitting he's a really good quarterback. At least now, most people are admitting he's going to be a high draft choice. So at least now they're looking at him on his own merits, and what they see is a guy, and they're going, hey, he's pretty good.
James Hale with us just a few more minutes this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Let's talk about my favorite team, and that is Sooner Women's Basketball. Talk to us about Sherry Cole. I know that they had a big game on Wednesday night, and that they took care of business like they were supposed to against Oklahoma State.
Well, yeah, they did, and they're better than Oklahoma State, and they played well. Last time for D-Rob, Danielle Robinson, to be on the court. She's one of the best players ever to play at OU, and I don't know who your favorite is, if it's Courtney Paris, if it's Stacey Dales, if it's Alyssa Walker, whoever it is, if it's Felicia Whaley, I mean, whoever it is. But all of you would have to really stack up and compare yourself against D-Rob as she would have to compare herself against them. I mean, she's one of them. You know, I sat down and started trying to come up with who I thought would be the top six players in the Sherry Cole era. And the reason why I did six is because Sherry always believes the sixth man on her squad is always a key player. And, but D-Rob has won more games. OU's won more games since D-Rob's been the point guard than at any other time for any other point guard during their 4 years. She's won more home games than any other point guard in the history of OU. She has a chance to be the point guard for the U.S. Olympic team in the future. She's certainly in the running and the contention. She's going to be one of the top 15 picks in the WNBA, and that's usually, those are the picks that usually stick in the WNBA. And she's still got an upside, E. You know, she's developed a pretty good 15 to 17 foot jumper.
Yeah.
She still doesn't shoot the three really well, so that's the next thing. Her range will just continue to get better and better and better until she's finally knocking them down, you know, and getting that done. Carly Rosenberger's improved a bunch. Her last two games, and this is always interesting when this happens to basketball players, but her last two games, it looks like the lights come on and she's finally playing up to her athletic ability. And Lauren Willis has been an outstanding role player, earned a scholarship, came on as a walk-on, and has earned a scholarship, you know. So this team's getting better. Whitney Hand is still not 100%, but she's gutting it out. Seems like she tweaks that knee every game, and you'll see her hobble around for 2 or 3 minutes. But by the end of the game, she's flying around. She hits the floor more than any other player I've ever seen.
Did you get to see on senior night, you mentioned Carly Roethlisberger. Did you get to see Big Ben? Was he there?
Ben was there. He's been there the last two games. He puts on, like, at the whiteout. He put on a white T-shirt. You know, he participates. I think he likes being on a college campus. He's been very nice. He's taken pictures with everybody. He said hello to everybody. Everybody wants to shake his hands. Now, OU tries to isolate him a little bit. They put him down on the floor, you know, and they kind of set him in the, with the media and things. And, you know, he kind of tries to hide and blend in. And he tries to blend in. I've seen him when he's set in the stands, you know, and he'll have a cap, but it won't be a Steelers cap or an OU cap. It may be like a
yes, I have too.
Cap or something, you know. Uh-huh. And he'll try to blend in and kind of pull that cap over him. And I think he gets away with it a little bit, you know. And I mean, it, you know, people don't bother him too much. But he did the coolest thing, E. I think that Carly wanted him to walk out with his parents and be a part of senior night because, you know, the parents and the entire family, there's 50 in the family, all of them come out on the floor. Carly's parents showed up, and Ben was there, and a sister was there, another sister. And Ben, I turned around and I noticed Carly was, and Ben were hugging in the tunnel. She'd come over and gave him a big hug, and I think he just told her, I think it's better I don't walk out there with it because, honey, I want this to be your night. I want this to be the night that shines on you, not on me. I don't want people talking about me, noticing me. I want them to notice you. And I thought that was just the coolest thing because I think he was thinking only of her best interest. Hey, if you want me to come, if you really want me to, I'll walk out there with you. But, man, I want this to be totally about you. I don't want them to ask you about me. I want them to talk about you. And that's what they did.
The ultimate big brother, right?
Oh, absolutely. It was a great thing.
We only have about one more minute with James Hale this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We got to close out the show. Talk to us. What is going on with the baseball program? What ranked already as high as number 2 in the country? I mean, Sonny Galloway's, he's got his guys playing defense on offense.
Yeah, he's got great pitching. He's got Bouchel and Seitzer at the corners. He's got speed up and down the lineup. Bushyhead is all-conference shortstops coming back. I mean, this is a really good baseball team. It's one of the best I've seen. 5 left-handers, and they're all good. That's pretty good. He's got 2 upperclassmen starters in the starting 2 spots. It's a really good team. Right now they're ranked 2 in the country. They'll get tested this week. They play San Diego State, USC. They have 4 really good games out there. They're on the road for the first time. I mean, they played at UGA the other day, but they're really good, E, and I think they are one of the top 5 teams in the country.
Well, we certainly hope to see you down here in the month of April when they take on TCU. That should certainly be a very good matchup.
I look forward to that because you're buying lunch.
Oh, there you go.
See ya.
Okay, James, we're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Jason Peter will be with us in just a moment.